Glad to be here again. Really happy. This is one of my favorite places to be, to speak in the U.S. and to be because this I was just telling someone after the first service, if you could just take the mentality and the nature and the quality of who you people are, and just we could just move it and drop it into like Paris or Tel Aviv. You guys would win that place. You would. You're what God is doing here is really unusual. When we're in Houston, that's where we are. When we're not anywhere else, it's a deep esoteric thought there. So you can ponder that later. But this is the level I think on usually. And so when we came, we got off the plane and we came into the airport. I looked at Don. I was like, man, there's just something about this place that's really, really amazing to me. And she said it was the carpet in the airport. I don't know what that means. I don't know what you're like, what? And anyway, but that isn't what I meant. It's not the carpet. But there's this vibe here that I really love. Something in this city and something especially among you. So the things that we talk about tonight, the way I hope you'll think about it is, you know, the way it's sort of supposed to be is that we get together, us as people in the kingdom, followers of Christ in the kingdom, and we're supposed to get together and sort of like charge each other up to go out and like take the city and then beyond. That's the way it's supposed to work. And so the writer of Hebrews, he or she or whoever says it this way, like, don't neglect the gathering together of the saints, of the people of the king. Don't neglect that. Because what happens there is that you gather together and you incite, is the word, incite one another to love and good deeds. So that's not like, you know, you come and hear a sermon or something. And you're like, yeah, you know, should we go? You know, it's hot out. They have air conditioning. It's unusually hot out. They have air conditioning. And this is kind of the motivation, or you like want to just hear some sort of abstract teaching and then... But it's like you come in here and things are said that incite you. They're like, man, like I want to do that. Or I want to do better than that. When our teams meet in different places, we get together and we start talking about what God's doing in our lives. When we hear his voice and we study his word and he's like leading us out into the dark world, like stars in the night. And we start talking, you know what happened last week? We were over here and this happened, and then God did this, and we said this, and God showed up here. And you tell this story, and the other people in the room are like, I'm gonna come back next week. I'm doing more than that. You know, they're like, I'm sick of hearing them talk. I'm coming back next week. I'm doing more than that. It's like a sports team or something like that. It's like I'm sick of hearing them talk smack. We're coming back and we're doing more. Like that. That's what Hebrews is saying. Get together and incite one another to love and good deeds. So you're supposed to come in here and go, I know what I'm doing tomorrow. I know what I'm doing tomorrow. And you go out there and like you do it and you come back in and go, guess what I did Monday? And everyone's like, ah, shoot. All right, you wait till next Monday. Like that. That's what's supposed to be happening. Is that what's happening? You know, most places we're not, it's not like that. But that's what it's supposed to be. And if it's like that, it's really fun being together. And then you're looking at people in your group and in your team and in your church and you're saying, like, what's going on? Like, what happened? You were like talking smack about going out and doing this and then you didn't do it. What happened? Well, I got afraid. And then instead of being like lost people, like, well, you're a coward. Like, you don't do that. You're like, wow, let's overcome that fear right now. Lord, help them understand what they're afraid of. Lord, where does that fear come from in their life? And the Spirit of God starts to work in you to set you free of that fear that's exposed as your friends and your family are inciting you to love and good deeds. That's the way it's supposed to be. And man, I would go to that. Lost people would go to that. So that's what we want to do now. That kind of thing. And that's why I like this place, because this is what you do. So when Gerald was saying, you know, can you guys come up and where are you going to, and can you come here and talk? And I'm always happy to do that. And we were talking about topics and what are you guys doing and what are we doing and what's God doing in our lives and how do they intersect on this night in God's timing and that sort of thing. And we started talking about how crazy the world is. I mean, it's crazy right now. just the people getting killed, and oh my gosh, it's just unbelievable. And we like know every incident, you know, in this world today. It's like you know everything that happens everywhere in the world right away. And not only do you know the event, you know what 1 million people think about that event 5 minutes after the event. It's like there's the event, and then whoa, 1 million opinions, 10 million opinions. And so it looks like in the newspaper, wherever you read, the internet or whatever, it's like, yeah, wow, there was a shooting at that place. And then the next, and then here comes the commentaries. Yeah, but do you know why that happened? No, why? And then you're following. Because the government was interested in that liquor store holdup. They were? Yes. And ISIS, they were there? Yes. How do you know? How, who says that? And you're out here. Who says that? And here's always who said it. They did. I heard them say. Did you hear them say that? Who? Them. Them are in charge of everything. Did you know that? How do you know? Because they said it. Yeah, but who did it? They did it. It's all pronouns running the world. It's weird. It's a world of pronouns. There's no proper nouns in charge of anything. Well, that's a proper noun. They're not in charge. It's a pronoun. Who? Them. And they. Who are they against? You. It's confusing. Like, what team is our pronoun on? Like that. And so, like, what do you do in that world? Like, who's our enemy in that world? And so we're afraid of our enemy and we hate our enemy, but we don't actually know who they are. Maybe there's some letters, a group of letters, IS. I'm against I's and S's in the world. Who are they? Them. Those people. Like that. How do you fight them? I don't know. I'm just going to basically be afraid of them. That's sort of my strategy. Wow. And dislike them. Okay. Good luck. That's how we live. That's what, like, and so what are we going to do about that? So we were thinking about that, and what does that mean? What does it mean? How do I think of enemies? Especially now, especially today. And so that's what we started praying about and thinking about and asking the Lord about. And then when you come to a place like this church, well, we love to be here, they have this amazing prayer team that when you're getting ready to come speak, this amazing prayer team comes in a room and they do this really interesting thing. I think it's novel. It's a good idea. I'm going to tell other churches to do this. They ask God what he wants to say. I think that's a great idea. Like, we're going to talk about this, but what do you want to say about it? And then we'll come out of the room and we'll say what you said. I think that's smart. I've tried saying things that God doesn't say. They don't usually work, typically. I just try and do what I feel, but it doesn't usually work. So you go in this room, and so the question is, what do we say about enemies? And like, I read the Word, so we study the Word, and we look at history, and we read books and all that, and then you come into the room, and you engage, because we're people of the King, and we're filled with the Spirit of the living God, who's not afraid of them. What's wild, he's not even afraid of the big pronoun, anyone. He's not afraid of anyone at all. Even though we're constantly explaining to God how he should be afraid. And so he talks about enemies to this amazing group of people, and they start to speak out. This is what I hear the Lord say about this topic. And I get to write it down, and Donna, we're all writing it down, and they're saying it, and then this amazing message comes out of the community of believers who are inciting each other to love and good deeds. And then we get to come out here and say what we heard. It's incredible. And you can do that every day in the kingdom of God yourself. So we're doing that, and this theme starts to work out as it does, because the Spirit of God always produces, among other things, unity. That's a byproduct of the Spirit of God, unity. If you don't have unity, the Spirit's not there. If you have fear, the Spirit's not in charge. These are ways that God, are you in charge here? Are you afraid of everyone? Yes. No. Do you hate everyone? 80% of them, no, I'm not there. These are warning signs that God gives us to come to him and say, I basically hate these people and I'm terrified of these people. Why? What's going on? That's called sanctification. God removing all those fears and turning in you into a person who's like Christ. So this theme comes out of this time together, and the theme kind of goes along this idea of there's people behind a closed door, an obstacle, and that that they can't get out of it. They're trapped in there. This is the picture that comes up among us as we're asking the Lord about this, and that there's a crack and the light is trying to go into that place, but they're stuck. And that maybe our enemies are the ones that are stuck in that dark place and they can't get out and they don't know what to do. So they're fighting their way out and killing themselves and other people trying to get out of the darkness. And maybe our job is to kick the door down, break the barrier open, and rescue them and bring justice. Wow, that's powerful. That's very godlike. So while that was happening, I started thinking about when I was a police officer as part of my journey with the Lord, and I was working. This is the image that came to my mind, was kicking down a door, and this is how God does these things. It's like experiences that you have in your life that he's saying, you know what really happened there? Let me explain that to you. It's amazing. It's how he sanctifies your past. Oh, it's so beautiful. Anyway, and so this one night, my partner was the officer who trained me. He was a senior police officer that trained me. And we called him, behind his back, the troll. We called him that because he looked like a troll. He acted like a troll. It was the word that you said when you saw him. You know, it was like, troll. You know, like that. Like he was about this tall. And yeah, just picture a troll and you got him. You'll see him. Anyway, and so he trained me, but I was, you know, on my own. But we were working together this one night, and there was a murder. There was a homicide, and it happened, and right away, people called the police, and so it was an active event. And so me and the troller, Jason, looking for this guy, and he had killed a security officer. So we knew he was a bad guy, not afraid to kill people. He killed him with a shotgun. We have a description of the car, sort of. So we're driving all over the place looking for this guy, and we drive into this apartment complex parking lot because none of us can find him, and me and the troller together, and we're running the computer through, you know, tags through this parking lot, just like looking for anything, and we get a hit on a tag, and the car fits the description. We jump out, feel the car, it's hot, and there's the apartment right there in front of it, so we just go bam, banging on the door. And these guys open the door. There's five or six guys in there. They open the door. We just kind of go in. And like, who's this car? Who owns this car? Where's this person? Line everybody up against the wall. Like, whose car is this? And no one's saying, no one's talking to us, but we know it's a bad, bad place. And they, you know, when a troll comes bursting into your house, it's like, people are like, what? Like, we know you. What is that? Who is that? And the troll doesn't know things like Miranda warning. He didn't know those sorts of things, but this is back in the day. And so we're questioning these guys, and they won't tell us anything, except one of the guys up against the wall is going like this. Because there's an upstairs, he's going like this, and I'm pretty sure he wasn't praying or, you know, having an experience. A lot of people, when they see the troll, they did that, like, but he wasn't doing that. He was looking up. He was like, and so... So I say to the troll, you know, I think the guy's upstairs. So secure these guys. We start going up the stairs. Up, there's a landing and turns up. We get to the landing and there's a shotgun case, you know, that someone threw on the floor in a hurry. And then there's shotgun shells go up the stairs. So like, I'm a pretty good detective. And so I like deduce pretty quickly. Like, huh. And I say to the troll, you know what? I'm pretty sure he's up there. And the troll's like, you're an idiot. That's why we call him the troll. It's like, did I train you? It obviously didn't. So we go up the stairs and into the hallway, and the light in the hallway doesn't work. It's dark up there. And so we like go down to this end, and we like search the three rooms down here, and then it's nobody, and then in this door. So we're going along the wall. He's on this side, and I'm on this side. And I push the door like this, and someone inside kicks it shut and locks it. We're like, okay, here's our guy. So here's the scenario in our professionally trained minds. So we have a shooter in the room with a shotgun, which is a pretty wide, once he shoots, it spreads pretty quick. So the doorway is basically a death trap for, unless we go in a certain way. And it's dark in the room, and so we're going to, once we're in the doorway, the first person has to turn on the light so we can quickly evaluate the room, but the one who turns on the light is the target, right? So the idea is, in the movies, the idea is that you we're going to kick the door in, and the first person is going to go in really low and on the ground, like over this way, and light up the room. You hold your flashlight out like this, so if they shoot, it goes in the direction. So that person's going to go in on the ground, light up the room. The second person in comes in and goes the opposite direction with his gun and just shoots. Quick, bam, light, bam. Because it's a murder, it's a felon. Bad guy, so we have probable cause and all this stuff. So that's the plan. We both know the plan because we've been trained in this scenario a bunch of times. So we're looking at each other. So I'm looking at the troll, which is like this, which I love to emphasize to him. Like first I look up here and he's like trying to talk to me. And I go, oh, you're down there. Okay, there you are. And so I'm looking at him. And the question is, who's going to go in first with the light? And I said to him, I'm young. You know, I'm a young man. You're not. You're old. I did. I told him, I looked at him, and I go, I'm 23. That's what I said to him. This is how noble I am and self-sacrificial. I'm 23, and you're an old troll, I'm pretty sure if I called your wife, she'd say, you go in first kind of thing. And he looks at me, and he goes, Do you know that you're going to go to heaven if you die? Because I was witnessing to him all the time. All the time we were together, I was trying to talk to him about Jesus. And he goes, do you know that you're going to go to heaven when you die? Are you positive about that? And I said, yeah, I am. And I felt, wow, yes, I am. And he goes, I'm not, you go first. It's like, wow, huh. Boy, that blew up in my face. Yeah. Ooh. They didn't teach me that in Bible class. So I said, like, okay, all right. So I take out my flashlight. And so in my mind, what I'm going to do is kick the door and hit the ground and roll. Unnecessary to roll, but I thought, I don't know, it's harder to hit someone rolling this fast, with a shotgun 5 feet away. But I don't know. So I'm going to go in, roll left on the ground, shine my light. Troll is going to come in this way and shoot from about this high off the ground. Probably hit the guy right here. But so that's the plan. So I go, bam! I kick the door in, and it was classic. It was great. The door just, and I look at the troll like, did you see that? That was awesome. Bam! Door. So I dive in the room, roll over. He comes in. He slides against the wall. He's like this. And when I hit the ground, my flashlight breaks in half. Just, and I can hear the top of it rolling across the room. I'm like, not in the movies. Never. These things break in half? And so I'm like pushing the button, but I know the top of the flashlight is somewhere over in the darkness. We can't see a thing. And so the troll's over there going, now, like that. And I'm like, it broke. So. Now we know the guy's in the room. I mean, we know he's there and all that stuff. So what do? Pitch black, bad guy, enemy in the room, and no light. So you have to make a decision in the complete dark about an enemy. And the only thing you really know to do is shoot. Because it's all about self-preservation, isn't it? But here's something in the Bible I want to read to you. It's in the book of Matthew. And I think it's like one of the, Jesus said a lot of crazy things. This is the absolute craziest thing he ever said. In Matthew chapter 5. My question for us tonight is, what does it mean to love your enemy? Enemies, what does it mean? What does that mean? Like, come on, be serious. So you have, like at the time of Jesus, Jesus is walking around and he's this amazing, you know, he's this amazing teacher that's come on the scene in history, and he's walking around and Israel, the Jewish people, are under occupation by the Roman Empire. Brutal, harsh occupation. It's not fun. It's a horrible situation. And the leadership of the Jewish people are corrupt. And in either in collusion with the Romans making money off the situation, or they're zealots that want to revolt against Rome, or they're Pharisees that are just trying to establish a religious, legalistic opposition, like a culture war against Rome. These are the options, but no one knows what to do. And so Jesus comes on the scene in this situation, and the good news is that the king has come. The king of the world, higher than Caesar, higher than Rome, higher than all that. The king has come. He has more power than Caesar. Do you understand? I mean, can you imagine that? How hard that was for those people to imagine? What are you saying? In Mark it says, and this is the gospel of God. This is the good news. The king has come. The kingdom is here. Repent. Change the way you think about everything and embrace the great news, the new thing. It's done. He's come. Our history is being fulfilled right now. There he is, born there. Just like the prophet said, here he is, that's the good news. If someone says to you, what's the good news of the gospel? Don't tell them that it's, you can go to heaven when you die. That is Mark chapter 1. Jesus says, this is the gospel of God. Here it is, get ready, take notes. You all get to go to heaven when you die. Thanks for coming. That's what the virgin birth was all about. Now I'm going to go die on the cross. Like, that's it? That's our whole message to the world. Really? What about we're being crucified down the streets in Jerusalem every day by Romans? What about that? You're going to heaven. Okay, is there anyone else that has a message for us? Like, what is that to a world that's dying, where them are in charge and they're taking over the whole thing? What? That's not good news. The good news is what the Bible says the good news is. The king is here. And because the king is here, the kingdom is here. And because the kingdom is here, you can live in the kingdom. When? Now. Start living with victory and power. When? Now. That's the good news. How's that going to happen? The king himself is going to pay the price. And you inherit all the benefit. Yes or no? Do you want that? Yes. That's the good news. And he's walking around explaining what that kingdom is going to look like right now. Not in some bizarre abstract future day. Love your enemies, but don't really worry about that. He's saying, no, I'm going to tell you how to do it. So he's walking around, and then you have Matthew chapter 5, this amazing foreign policy strategy, this amazing servant insurgency strategy. Listen, this is what he's teaching. Servant insurgency. Servant insurrection. Servant insurrection. Humble yourself in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift you up. Servant rebellion. Serve and win. That's what he's teaching. No one's ever said that before. No one has ever said it since. I don't care what religion you read. They never said that. And so he goes to this place and he's doing this teaching, and don't glamorize it into, you know, it's like the Sermon on the Mount. What does that mean? Or like the Beatitudes. Have you read the Beatitudes? Like, what is that? It's a, you should be these attitudes. Get it? What? Like our people are being killed by Roman occupation. Do you think he's doing the Beatitudes? He's developing a revolt against the king of the world, Satan. And he's telling you how to fight it and win. That's what he's doing. And so the Jewish people of the time, it wasn't like they were going, hey, are you guys going to the Sermon on the Mount on Wednesday? That's not what they're doing. It's like, do you have tickets to the Beatitudes? I've waited so long to get into this thing. That's not how they're talking about it. That's how we talk about it. Like, what are you talking about? Well, it wasn't like a concert. It was a Tuesday. A day where everyone's like, well, my life pretty much is horrible with the Roman occupation and the corrupt Jewish government. And it's never going to get any better. What's this guy doing? He's talking about how to win this thing. Well, nobody else is. I'm going over there. And that's what they do. What's he going to say? We don't know. And then he starts to talk. And he incites them to love and good deeds. He incites them into a revolution of love and good deeds that will topple the power of the Roman Empire in real life, in their life. And in 300 years, these people rule the world. And there is nothing that Rome could do to stop them. Do you think that way about this world and them that are coming? So here's what Jesus says. He says, but I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. What? Are you kidding me? To show that you are children of the Father, of the Father, the one that's really in charge, the one with the real power over life and death. They do not own you. Nobody has the power of life and death over you. Who are you afraid of? Nobody has the power of life or death over you except God. Who are you afraid of? Who are you protecting yourself from? Love them. Pray for them to show that who your king is. You are children of the Father who is in heaven, for he makes his sun to rise on the wicked and the good. He's in charge of the whole thing. He's not afraid of groups of people. And makes the rain fall upon the upright and the wrongdoers alike. For if you love those who love you, what reward can you have? Like, anyone can do that. That doesn't take dramatic spiritual transformation for you to like people that like you. What is that? Do not even tax collectors do that? Ooh, tax collectors. Now he's naming bad guys. Now he's comparing us to the bad guys. Like, I was invited to this Bible study near my house in Houston, and it was for older people, older men, and 55, and so I was like, yeah, okay. So I go to it, and I'm there, and the guy leading it, he's talking about the situation in the world and how we have to be on the right side. And I was like, okay. He goes, I'm on the side of the Israelites. That's what he says. I'm like, the Israelites? Are they still around? Are they here? I thought they were gone. The Israelites are here? And everyone was like, and then you had to say whose side you're on. It was like spiritual Red Rover or something like that. I don't know. Like, what do we do? Is this a Bible study? What is this? Whose side are you on? And so it was, and like, I'm on the side of the Israelites. And so when it got to me, I was like, well, I'm going to go with the Hittites. If we're doing extinct people groups, I'm going with the Hittites. The Israelites? Like, what are you talking about? These are people. These are Jewish people. They live in a land called Palestine. That's what the Romans called it. And they're in this situation. And now Jesus is saying to these oppressed people, even the tax collectors can do what you guys are doing. The tax collectors are the bad guys. And you're only as good as the bad guys. Anybody can do that. That will never change anything. You like who you like. They like who they like. And you fight. Like, what is that? What strategy is that? And then he gets even worse. And if you greet only your brethren, what more are you than the Gentiles? That's even worse. That's like the pork guys. I mean, that's worse than tax collectors who don't eat pork. Now it's people that eat pork. You're like them. Can you imagine if Jesus was given this talk here, what he'd be comparing us to? Think of your worst enemy, them. We forget that. We read the Bible like it's, I don't know, like it's Harry Potter or something. It's like, oh yeah, I know that group. You're in that group. You are that group. You know, don't read it from out here. This is real. This is God talking to people. And he says, you therefore must be perfect. You, people of the kingdom, you have to be perfect. Growing in complete maturity of godliness in mind and character, having reached the proper height of virtue and integrity as your heavenly Father is perfect. Live like that. How? Love your enemies. Why? Why? Because, listen, they are not your enemies. That's the truth of that. It's like love your enemies. That's so abstract. I'm like, okay, I'm going to file that away to something I'm never going to do. I'll go to bed at night and go, oh, Lord, help me to love other people. And that's all I'm going to do is it's so abstract. He's saying, love your enemies because they're not really the enemy. And if you don't love them, you'll think they are the enemy. They're not the enemy. And the real enemy is killing you every day. Because he's got you fighting the wrong people. He's got you fighting people. And if you don't love those people, you will continually be deceived by this strategy and he will be taking you and your family and your country straight down the drain while you hate the wrong thing. That's what he's saying. Stop hating Romans. They're not your enemy. Stop hating tax collectors and Gentiles and Democrats and Republicans and this group because they are not your enemy. They are locked in a room in darkness and they can't get out. Love them, rescue them, and be on the same team and beat the real enemy and win the whole thing, take the whole empire back. Yeah, that's what he's saying. And he's saying, you people on Tuesday or Sunday in Portland, tonight, Monday, the whole thing changes the minute you say yes to that. It all changes. Now, I don't have a lot of time to go way into this, but my question to God, when we were thinking about this and we were talking about this, is God, who's the enemy? Like, I mean, I could say Satan or whatever. Who's the enemy? But this is what the Lord says. You know, sometimes he says things that I haven't thought of. You ever notice that about God? It's like he thinks of stuff you don't. You know, because we're always informing God about stuff in the world. It's like, God, in case you aren't watching the news lately, or you're watching the wrong channel, you know, let me update you, because you don't seem to know what's going on here, because these guys are in power and they're not supposed to be. That's how we talk to God. So please, 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 please get them out and put my guy in, would you? If you put my guy in, it'll all be fine. Do you understand what that sounds like to God? It's like, are you telling me what to do? Oh, no, 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 no. Yes, 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 yes. And if you could kill a couple of them, you know, I'm not just a suggestion. Like that. Who is the enemy? Here's a disturbing passage. This is a disturbing book. In case you haven't read, it's disturbing. You got to love your enemies. That's disturbing. Who's the enemy? Here's what Paul says, Romans 6. Chapter 5, verse 6. While we, this isn't Gentiles and tax collectors, this is Jamie, you. While we were yet in weakness, powerless to help ourselves, at the fitting time Christ died on behalf of you, the ungodly. Wow. I thought they were the ungodly and I was like on the right, I'm with the Israelites. Now, it is an extraordinary thing for one to give his life even for an upright man, though perhaps for a noble and lovable and generous benefactor, well, I mean somebody that gives you stuff, someone might even dare to die, but probably not. That was my little comment there at the end. Verse 8, but God shows and clearly proves his own love for us by the fact that while we were still sinners, Christ, the Messiah, the Anointed One, died for us. Therefore, since we are now justified into a right relationship with God by Christ's blood, how much more certain is it that we shall be saved by him from the indignation and the wrath of God? Who's he mad at? It's a selfie. Click. I'm going to take a picture of who God's mad at. Click. It's a selfie. That's disturbing. Like, I had the camera aimed at all his enemies and it took a picture of me. That's frustrating. 10, if for while we were enemies, wow, he's just going to say it. We were enemies. We were reconciled to God through the death of his son. It is much more certain now that we are reconciled that we shall be saved and delivered from sin's dominion through his resurrection life. Not only so, but we also rejoice and exultingly glory in God in his love and in perfection through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we have now received and enjoy reconciliation. Who's the enemy? I am. Who made me not the enemy? He did. He rescued me from the enemy that deceived me, accused me into being an enemy of the one that loved me. He kicked the door down. He kicked the door down and he came in and died so I could walk out of that room and be his friend while I was his enemy. That's powerful. That's revolutionary. How do we stop our enemy? How do we love our enemy? Because what we're concerned about in this passage is talking about when God kicks the door down of the real enemy and sets us free, he reconciles and he brings justice, reconciliation, justice, reconciliation, justice. They're never separate. Because we want justice, don't we? Oh, we want justice. But justice without reconciliation is murder. That's all it is. I'm just going to go in and kill them. They deserve it. Wow. That's what Satan does. But reconciliation, while justice is just flimsy, diluted, easy believism nonsense that doesn't have any power. But reconciliation with justice, wow, that rules the world. Who's in charge of justice? God. Who made us ministers of reconciliation? God. We're the reconcilers. He's the one that handles the justice part. Don't worry, he does a really good job of it. He really does. I have never in my career, in anywhere in the world, met a bad guy that was having a great time. I don't know what you think about people living that are just brutalizing other human beings like they're having fun. And we need to punish them because they're having fun doing that. They're not. They're sick. Their world is so horrible. I mean, we've gone after guys that are doing horrible things and we're like, man, when we get this guy, we're going to get him alone in a room and we're going to make him pay. And we get him and we get him alone and we're sitting there looking at this monster in our minds. And you know what? They turn out to be an abused child that's now 27 years old. And that's all they are. And all they've ever learned and all they've ever wanted was someone to look at them and pay attention to them. And they've resorted to killing people to do that. And you're looking at them, you're like, oh man, God have mercy. Oh my gosh, it's so sad. But in our minds, the enemy's like, kill him. Kill him. Like that. He is not your enemy. The enemy is the one that destroyed him. Kicked the door in much earlier in his life and bring him out so this does not happen. Set him free. That's our job. That's what we do. Why? Because Christ did it for us. Love your enemy. This idea doesn't start with Jesus. Jesus is speaking about what the whole Bible has been talking about from the fall all the way till the end. It's about reconciliation and justice against the enemy who is Satan. He is your enemy. It's funny because I don't hear anybody talking about what to do against him. And where do we start the battle against him? Right here. Right here. If you don't know how to forgive people right here in Portland, in your family, you will never be used by God in that battle out there. You can't be used because you don't know who the enemy is and you yourself are an enemy. If we're going to pray in a second, and I want you to ask God, Who in my life do I think is my enemy? Who do I hate? Who do I wish something bad would happen to him? Who do I never want to talk to again? That person or people group or whatever, you have to release them in forgiveness. Doesn't mean you ever have to be their friend, but you have to release them in forgiveness so that you are free and walk in the light. And then God can say, now let's go fight the real enemy. If you don't live in the kingdom of God under the forgiveness of God himself towards you, you are powerless against the enemy. You are in opposition to God in your own life. You need to let Christ kick the door open in your own life and say, I receive the sacrifice of Christ from God for my sin. Bathe me in your forgiveness in order that I might forgive other people and defeat the enemy. Forgive us our trespasses inasmuch as we forgive those who trespass against us. That's the real war. Can you do that? That's what we have to do. God, who do I hate? You cannot love people that you're afraid of. You can't. If you're afraid of people, you can't love them. Let God take away your fear and love freely with power. I was with the director of an intelligence services for a particular country, and we were in a room and we were talking about this, and he's not a believer, and I was talking about love your enemies. And he was frustrated. He was like, okay, all right, imagine you're sitting in the room and he names like their number one foe in the world, the leader of the organization that's their number one enemy. He goes, all right, you're sitting in a room with that person. What are you going to say to him? He's asking me as a professionally, what are you going to say to them? And I said, all right, good question. I'm going to look him right in the face and I'm going to go, what can we do to bless you and your people? That's what I'm going to say to that guy. And he throws up his hands. He goes like, that's insane. That is insane. It's weakness. Have you ever heard that? If you don't show, if you tell people you love them and forgive them and you forgive stuff, you're weak. You ever hear that? We hear it all the time. Be strong. Hate them. Be strong. Oh my gosh. And I said, no. I said, what are you going to say to him? He goes, I would kill him in the room. And I said, and what would happen? You'd go to war. And Satan would be going, beautiful, way to go. You just advanced this another 50 years. Beautiful, thank you. Satan's in the room going, kill him, kill him, kill him, kill him. Get him. Look what he's done to you. Look what he did to your family. Look what they did to you. Every day, Satan's on the radio going, you know what they just did to us? Do you know what that country is going to do to you? Do you understand what they're going to do to you? Bomb them, kill them, fight them, kill that guy, hate that guy, put that guy in jail, kick those people out of your country. Come on, come on. And we're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Rule of law, rule of law. Let's have the rule of law. You know who was saying that? The Pharisees. And Jesus is like, you want the rule of law? Here's the law. You say this, I say love your enemies. That's what I say because you're going to lose and I'm going to win. You're going to lose with this strategy because your advisor is Satan. But I'm going to teach you how to rule the entire Roman Empire. And you know who's going to die in the process? You are. And here's the amazing thing about Jesus. He never says something that he doesn't do himself. Never. He's no cool teacher. He's a doer. When he says you do this, he leads the way in doing it. You know why you guys are not enemies with God? Because he died to take away the rulership of Satan in this world. And he did it. And you are free to walk into the kingdom. And if you're not in it right now, run to a place where you can win. Come out of hatred, come out of anger and hostility, come into forgiveness. Live in forgiveness for yourself and others. It's the power. When I've done this so many times, when we've been in rooms with militant leaders and I say to them, what can we do to serve you? It's unbelievable what happens. It's like Satan's like, oh, I'm finished. He's done. You rule the room when you do that. Love is the greatest weapon. Paul's like, if you go into a room and you speak the language and you're the smartest guy in the room and you sacrifice your body to the flames and you don't love that people, stay home. It doesn't do any good if you don't love them. You're just an irritant to them. Go home. Let the people that will love and sacrifice come, because they will win with power and authority. When we've done this in rooms, I'm telling you, you can watch the violent men in the room lose their foothold. They're like, what did you just say? We want to bless you. What are they going to say back to that? Well, we want to kill you. Then they're isolated. You're the enemy. They're the bad guy. And everyone's like, what are you saying? He just said he wants to bless you. What are you talking about? What are you fighting about? But if I go in that room and go, this is a red line. I'm drawing a red line on you. You are asking for the war. Bring the war. I'm drawing the line. Bring the war. That's what you're doing. Don't do that. It loses. Win, win. So me and my partner, we kick in that door and it's completely dark. Wow, it's completely dark. And the only thing the troll can do is shoot. It's like, who's our protector in that room? Our gun. Isn't that right? Isn't it smart? Shoot. Have enough cause, don't we? And I just said to God, God, turn on the light in here somehow, because we can't really see what to do. When you lose your temper, when you do something out of fear and anger, you are blind. Everyone knows. Any professional fighter knows this. Once you lose your temper in a fight, you lose, because the smarter opponent is always thinking. And he will counter anything you do because you're doing it in rage and blindness and reaction. God, turn on the light in the room. And the troll, for some reason, he told me later, it's like a light bulb popped in his head of what to do. It was like, you mean like an original idea? This is new for him. It was like, you mean like an original? He was like, yeah, I thought of a different strategy in the room suddenly. And it was really cool. It's like Romans, don't be conformed to the patterns of the world. Like, this is what you were trained to do, but you have a God that's not locked into situations. Ask him, here's what we would normally do. Is this right? And God says, no, it's not right. Then you will know, Paul says, the perfect and excellent way. That's for every day. That's not like one time. What's the way? That way, okay. Don't, thanks. It's like all the time. Is this the right way to study this? Is this the right way to talk to this person? Is this the right way to do this? We were trained to do it this way. If you don't say anything different, we'll go ahead with that. Sometimes God says, go ahead with that. Other times he's like, don't turn your flashlight on. Jamie, don't turn your flashlight. Give me the flashlight. All right, don't turn that thing on. It's like, who broke my flashlight? Jesus. He did? He saved our life by doing that. Wrong strategy, wrong strategy, wrong strategy. That's not your enemy in that room. But everything says he's not. And so the troll, he holsters his weapon and he takes out his mace and he just starts spraying it into the dark like this. Shh. Well, it's actually like shh. Into the dark. And, you know, of course I can smell it because it's hitting me as well as, you know. And all of a sudden we hear this little girl start to cry. And we're like, oh my gosh. And then a man says, don't shoot, don't shoot. And he turns the light on. And when the light comes on, there's our guy. He's got the shotgun in his hand. He's ready to shoot. And he's holding this little girl up in front of him. And in his mind, he was thinking, he knew that's how we would come in the room. He knows. He knows what he's doing too. The enemy's smart. And he figured that we would just come in and shoot if it was dark. And that we would kill the girl, and it would so mess us up when we realized what was happening that he would either be able to kill us or get out. It's not a bad strategy for an evil mind. And God's like, no, no. And God stopped us. And so the troll's spraying this, and so he sets the girl down and he surrenders. And that guy goes to prison for 45 years. Justice. But in prison, he meets some amazing guys that go into prisons and kick down doors to reach prisoners, and he comes to faith in the prison. And he writes me a letter, and he says, that night, people were going to die. People were going to die in that room, and that girl was going to die. But God stopped it. And God rescued me from the real enemy. And now he leads a ministry inside the prisons where he is doing his time, but it's a ministry of reconciliation. What's our strategy in the world? Kick in the door and shoot, whatever that means to you. Condemn, curse, hate, or kick in the door and flood the room with light and rescue the hostages that are in that room. He wasn't our enemy. That girl in front of him wasn't our enemy. She would have thought, oh, she's collateral damage. That's too bad. It's his fault. We don't care if civilians die. It's too bad. It's his fault. It's not our fault. We're just doing our job. That's wrong. Her life matters. And God's like, I will not do that. We're not going to do this. But if you don't hear God, then you'll just do it. I'm asking you tonight to let God kick your door in and shine the light in you and to set you free in order that we can go out together. And I'm excited about this and kick the doors in out here of these industries out here and these places out here where people are trapped and don't know how to get out of, and it's killing them and the people around them, and we know the way out. But we have to love them. We have to love them in order to go in and sacrifice to get them. And we can do it. And we can do it in Portland, and we can do it in Iraq, and we can do it in Afghanistan, but we must love our enemies. Let's pray. Father,